Hello and welcome. This is the Middle East Today coming to you from Beirut, and I'm Maryam Saleh. The Egyptians are only weeks away from electing their new president in the very first election after last year's revolution, which led to the fall of the dictator Hosni Mubarak. Despite the fact that many look to the elections as a way to enhance true democracy in the state, there's also fear that the military council is working the elections. Now, who has better chance of winning the election? We'll try to get some answers with our guests today. We're joined by Professor Ziad Al-Hafiz, professor at the American University of Beirut. We're also joined by Mr. Adel Lutfi. He is a writer and journalist joining us from London. Let me begin with you, Mr. Ziad Al-Hafiz. Now, when we take a look at what's happening now before the elections, many of the figures were disqualified or prohibited from entering the presidential race. Now, you have figures that are symbolic of the old regime, like Mr. Omar Suleiman and so on. But how about other figures who were very active in the revolution?
Well, you have to look into the particulars of local or domestic politics in Egypt. And the balance of power among the various parties is not really known accurately, despite the result that the parliamentary elections have led to. So who is active, who has been active, and who is a leader in the revolution is yet to be determined. But I think what has happened is that the narrowing of the field has been the target of the current government and behind it the military council. And there are basic various reasons for narrowing the field in order to, I wouldn't say to polarize the outcome, but as much as to focus the attention of people on two or three choices at maximum. So you can have a clear direction for the new leadership Egypt is going to have. So you have at this stage the choice between three front runners according to the latest poll, and I do not have too much faith in the poll that were given. One is Amr Musa, the other one is Abdel Menem Abdel Fattah, and the rest you may have Mohamed Morsi. And the rest of the field, there are about seven or eight more candidates, mm-hmm. are in the second tier, so to speak, of the large block of votes, according to the polls, if we are to believe or to give any credibility to such polls. But uh-huh. I think it's going to be focused around these three, uh-huh. and they represent the two tendencies, so to speak, in the political arena nowadays.
Yes, but the fact that you have a figure like Khairat Shatir from the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a popular organized party, has bigger chance perhaps than other upcoming political groups perhaps to go into the race, but disqualifying this person who is perhaps major symbol of this group, you think that lessens the chance of the Muslim Brotherhood to be in power?
Not really, because you have to go back a little bit in time. When Abdel Munim Abdel Fattah decided to join the race, he was prohibited by the Muslim Brotherhood, said that they would not have any, they're not going to field any candidate. Later on, and he was expelled because he overruled the decision of the leadership of the Muslim Brotherhood. Later on, they fielded Khairat al-Shatir, which means that there is a little bit of contradiction in the position of the Muslim Brotherhood. Now they are fielding al-Mursi. So I don't think it is a question of the chances that are being hampered as much as there is an issue of credibility within the Muslim Brotherhood.
Uh-huh, yes.
And the government and the military council they were very smart in outlining or bringing up or focusing on that kind of lack of credibility. Uh-huh.
We're going to focus more a little bit more about the council and their role in this. But let me ask Mr. Lutfi what he thinks about the fact that you have major figures disqualified. Do you agree with Mr. Al-Hafiz that this helps perhaps narrow the number of candidates so that people are able to choose, and it showed that perhaps there is a lack of credibility among the Muslim Brotherhood?
I think the military council does not intend to relinquish power. That has been my opinion from day one, 11th of February 2011. I said they were there to stay, and I have not changed my mind as yet, because there is no reason to change my mind for very obvious reasons. Number one, if you get an Islamist president now, he would be under pressure to bring the military council and others to justice, and they would be criminally charged. So they wouldn't want an independent or Islamist president. The other thing is that they would have a puppet president, and the likely one to play that role is Amr Musa. But even a puppet president can do the same and can cause damage. And we saw that with Sadat and Mubarak. They were considered puppet presidents. And they still wiped out the opposition or whoever they wanted to do, because the president is establishment before an individual. So I think the military council would not relinquish power.
There's just one point.
After all,
Before we go into what could probably happen as a result of this, but what you're trying to say is that the military council is trying to pave the way for Amr Musa to become perhaps the most likely candidate.
I think if the elections is to go through, Amr Musa would be generally the favorite to win, and the absolute favored or favorite of the military council. He would be their puppet president, and he's an all dancing, all singing, as the English say, personality, and he would fit them and their purpose accurately. But I still think they would fear him, because after all, he would be president. However, if the elections go through, Amr Musa would be the favorite in general, and after him probably Dr. Amr Abdul Manab Abdul Fattah, the dissident, yes, of the Islamic Brotherhood.
All right, so let me get what you said back to Professor Al-Hafiz, the fact that...
May I comment on him?
Yes, of course. And also the issue of the military council, that they will not relinquish power, the fact of Amr Musa, everything. I need your comments on these.
I think Mr. Lutfi has pointed out to a very important issue, namely that the military council is not really ready to relinquish the power. And to substantiate that position, I think the history of Egypt since 1952 at least, the real power was always vested with the military, even though that you had presidents, whether it was during Nasser or even Sadat or even Mubarak, the real power behind the scenes was always the military, until certain demarcation lines were crossed by, let's say, Mubarak, and he tried to shun aside the military by promoting the candidacy of his son, Jamal. And that was a red line. So the real power is with the military. And that's a fact that people have to acknowledge, or you cannot understand anything of the political dynamics in Egypt if you ignore the factor that the military is the real power and the most organized power in the field. Having said that, the other issue is, either you make the assumption that elections are going to take place, and therefore we can speculate about the chances and the possibilities of who may win or who may not win, or you make the assumption that there are no elections to be taking place, that some organization or some institution like this Supreme Court or think will invalidate the possibility of having the elections. But we are not there yet, so we work under the assumption in our analysis today
that the elections are
going to take place. And in that case, your guess is good as mine about whose chances are the best. I don't think the polls have been really accurate in promoting one candidate versus another. The way the polls have been conducted are at best dubious, and there are serious credibility issues about these polls. It may be that the military would like to have a person like Amr Musa. I'm not sure about that. But what is also the unknown variable is how people are going to react. I'm not confident that all the analysis that have been built assume that the Egyptian people are going to behave in a very predictable fashion. And I think this is going to be the greatest surprise.
With that in mind, let me ask Mr. Abdullah Al-Ashal, who's joining us on the phone right now from Cairo. He's a presidential candidate in Egypt. Mr. Al-Ashal, would you agree that perhaps the military council somewhat playing the elections and doesn't want figures that are revolutionary figures, if we may say, be perhaps popular in being front runners in this election?
I'm not sure that the elections will run in time because we have some thoughts about some relationship between the date of elections or the president elected and the making of the constitution. This is why the making of the constitution will take a long time, and we need prompt elections for the president. This interrelation between both of them makes everything dubious and doubtful. On the other hand, we have two camps in Egypt concerning the presidential candidate. We have the camp which is professing Egypt as independent and as a modern state, democratic and belonging to all the Egyptians. And the other party wants to revive the Mubarak regime with all its alliances inside and outside. Of course, the United States and Israel are the main supporters of Mubarak and his clique, who are now running for elections, especially Amr Musa himself. So this is why I think that the fight would be between the two camps. Of course, the law enacted and ratified by Mr. Tantawi, the head of the military council, is a very crucial development in Egypt, because this is going to limit the competition between the two camps in Amr Musa on one hand and all the nationalist camp on the other, after excluding or disqualifying Ahmed Shafiq. I think the whole process is not very clear now, and while time is progressing, everything will be clear, I think, in 1 week, because all the nationalist camp now is negotiating how to be united and how to be steadfast against the other party. But if Amr Musa himself is excluded, this would make it very easy for the nationalist party to make a real competition among the candidates. And I think we have something like 5 candidates, and they could be competing. Mm-hmm. And the people will be free. The problem of the other party, I mean the Mubarak party, that they are coming to the streets to buy the votes of the people. And this, we saw a scenario like this when Amr Musa and Ahmed Shafiq were trying to get support, written support from the people. And mm-hmm. they bought the votes of the people in very high price.
Yes.
So we have to protect the will of the Egyptian voters and to protect also the conscience of the voters, because we have the media, which is financed and receiving money from some candidates who receive also money from abroad. Now Egypt is in a mess, and they think the people of Egypt are going to clarify the situation in a few days.
Yes. How about the new constitution, which should be approved before the election? Do you think that one will be canceled before the other, that perhaps we will just postpone the issue of the constitution in order to run the elections, or vice versa?
The military council made it very clear that the two tracks are related. So there is no president without constitution. If this is the case, the constitution will take very long time to be made. And we have very harsh polemics among the partners who are trying to constitute the constitutional committee, which is going to draft the constitution. We face many troubles because the people have been divided, mm-hmm. and the political forces are not united, and some of them have different affiliations, either thoughtful, religious, or abroad. So this is why I don't feel that the Constitution will be ready at all in perhaps in 1 year.
Yes.
In this case, if you tie the president to the Constitution, this would mean very easily that the president would be elected after 1 year, not now.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the wave of protests that took place in Tahrir Square would affect how the elections are run, would affect the decisions of the military council?
Yes. The masses in Tahrir on Fridays will continue to remind the military council that the people are able to revolt and they are able to protest, and they can also give him a sign that we need the elections in time. And we need the constitution at a certain moment. We don't have that strict relationship between both of them. It's not obligatory. We could have a president, and we have a constitutional declaration in which all the competences of the president could be enacted. Mm-hmm. And in this case, we can move to submitting power to a civilian government. We don't need the military council mm-hmm. to be maintained in power so as long as he can.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Abdullah Ashal, joining us on the phone from Cairo. Mr. Lutfi, I want to ask you about how do the current laws in Egypt right now gain legitimacy? Is it through the parliament? Is it through the military council? This seems to be still somehow obscure for the time being.
I think the situation in Egypt now is very messy, to be honest, because the military council is flawed, and everything that has come after the removal of Mubarak is flawed and subject to very serious challenges which have taken place already, and the results of these challenges can just appear any time. So you are talking about a parliament which is flawed, and only yesterday, we heard reports about the Supreme Court deciding that it was a flawed parliamentary election. After all, whether the lower house or the upper house, Majlis al-Shura. So I strongly think that this parliament will be disbanded sooner rather than later. The power is still with the military council, which is a flawed council by its nature, really. It's not an elected council. So as I said last week on this channel, that we are back in square one. And as you've just said, it is Tahrir Square who should be deciding what to happen. Though I am not optimistic about that, because the intelligentsia are very weak and divided. And the youth, even the youth, every one of them has decided, or at least thought, that he is a leader of his own and on his own merits. So the situation is really, really messy. But everything right now is in the hands of the military council. And I can see the military council deciding or inciting the disbandment of both houses of the parliament, and even the cancellation of the presidential election, which would be a very good thing.
Yes.
Because all of the candidates, with respect, are nothing but Mickey Mouse candidates. Probably except for Abdelmenab Al-Futuh, but he is suspected of having a Qatari nationality, which hasn't been declared officially. And you have the other guy, Dr. Salim Al-Awwa. He is of Syrian parenthood, and all these things might come up any time. So the whole situation is really a farce. And I think the best thing to do, honestly, is to cancel the presidential elections and go on drafting a new proper constitution, keeping in mind, and I'm hopeful about that, that the intelligentsia of Egypt and the youth of Tahrir Square and other Egyptian
mean
squares
do something together
to form
this
a
in
proper
mind,
step forward.
All right, all right. Let me take this issue to Mr. Al-Hafiz. Do you agree that the national parties are not united enough? Perhaps we are back to square one, like Ms. Lutfi has said.
Well, in a sense that after 40 years of almost one-sided rule, political life is pretty much has been paralyzed, and it takes time to provide a new set of life to the political forces. Having said that, as both your guests have correctly pointed out, the situation is very murky now in Egypt. You can argue any way you want, and you will be right, and also you will be wrong at the same time. So you don't have really good benchmark by which you can decide which direction is going to go. But always bear in mind that the real power is still with the military, and I'm not sure that they are ready to relinquish it one way or another. Now, the question becomes how, what is the form, how it's going to take place, that nobody knows for sure. I think the military is playing for time, letting, as I say, time do the rotting, so to speak, of the whole process itself. I mean, many of the candidates are being discredited one after the other for good or not good reasons, but the result is the same. The Muslim Brotherhood lost a lot by changing or flip-flopping in their position. So there is also a question of credibility. So given that, I'm not sure to what extent having the elections in May is going to be a set proposition. But also on the other hand, the same kind of doubts have been cast about having the parliamentary election, that they would not take place, and they did take place.
But then they did take place.
So at the end of the day, even if they take, if the presidential election take place, it doesn't mean it's done deal, because as it has been pointed out, there can always be a case for invalidating the election itself.
Yes. To what extent is the military council dictated by previous accords, like, for example, the Camp David Accord? Can they really approve the issue of cutting gas export to Israel? Can they approve the issue, for example, the Mufti's visit to Al-Quds? These issues, how much do they influence how the military council plays out?
I don't think there is a one position by the military council. I think within the military council you have various directions, various options. Some are nationalistic, some are, let's say, still tied to the old regime policies. So we cannot really say that the military council is a homogeneous body with one idea, with one policy. So that's why you may have contradictory policies. On one side, they cut the gas, or they turn a blind eye on the blowing up of pipelines. And on the other hand, when they take the decision of stopping the oil gas process, you've got some voice saying, well, actually, it is a commercial issue. We need to review the all things. But by and large, there has been a lot of literature being published about the position of the military council, saying they are totally infuriated to the United States and they are bound by the Camp David agreements. I'm not really sure that this is a very accurate description.
Professor Ziad Al-Hafiz from the American University of Beirut, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. We're also joined by Mr. Adel Lutfi in London and by Mr. Abdullah Ashal, presidential candidate, joining us from Cairo. Our email is metoday@presstv.com. Stay with Press TV. Goodbye for now.